Hi, welcome back. In this video, we're going to discuss the shortcomings of CPI, or the Consumer Price Index, and nominal versus real wages. Okay, so let's start looking at the biases in the Consumer Price Index, or CPI, right? The substitution bias. CPI assumes we purchase the same number of goods and services and regardless of the price, right? So no matter what the price is, we're going to purchase the same goods and services regardless of what the price is. So if we buy Tide, we're going to buy Tide. If we buy Pepsi, we're going to buy Pepsi. You know, whatever that is what we're going to buy because that is what we like and there is no substitution for it regardless of price. Okay, new products. CPI updates. So CPI updates product pricing every 2 years. Therefore, prices are overestimated, pushing CPI artificially higher. So notice that if we are calculating consumer price, the consumer price index, which associates for inflation, right? So CPI is going to calculate the inflation rate for us, right? So even it's calculated. So the CPI is calculated every 2 years. But let's look at, for instance, let's look at the prices of a tablet, for instance, right? So when tablets first came out, you might have been able to buy them for $500, but over this 2 year span, the price of a tablet might have went from $500 to $250, right? But because the CPI is only updated every 2 years, it's going to price in the $500 tablet price. So that is a bias of CPI that doesn't make it accurate, right? So I think they just do that for simplicity reasons, thinking that prices will remain the same over time. But obviously, as new technology comes into place and better products and more competition come into the market, prices will go down. So increase in quality bias. The CPI does not accurately reflect product quality increases. You have to understand, CPI is a government calculation of prices, right? And to tell us how we are curbing inflation. How is our government dealing with inflation of prices, right? Because we want to control inflation over time so that consumers are protected, right? So we're discussing the biases. What's wrong with the CPI calculation, right? So I want to identify first, right, where there are negativities in this CPI calculation. Okay, so this is an actual government figure that the government uses all the time to use as an indicator of inflation rates. Okay, so this is why CPI is important for us. So CPI does not accurately reflect product quality increases, okay? So as quality increases, right, the CPI does not reflect the increase in the quality, right? So CPI only recognizes price increases and doesn't justify why the increase occurs. So if we have an increase in quality and the price goes up, right, you know, the CPI doesn't really signify that the quality increase. They just show the price increase, right? So it's not as reliable as it should be. CPI, so for the outlet bias, CPI only captures prices from retail establishments and does not consider discount shopping such as Amazon and Barnes and Noble, right? So they're only going to calculate the sales or the prices that are in the bricks and mortar establishment, right? You go to Best Buy, you go to Target, you go to Walmart, you know, and you buy from the store, you're going to the bricks and mortar location. Those are the only prices that CPI is factoring in to their calculation. They don't factor in online sales, just bricks and mortar consumer sales that way, right? So this CPI figure, as it's kind of balanced throughout time, is not really accurate, but I think they use it because because, you know, things are so, you know, the economy and products sold are so vast and so large, it's really almost impossible to understand the changes of quality of every product in the market, and it's hard to really justify all the price swings of every product in the market. So if we were constantly updating, you know, quality and prices in the market, you know, on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, that process would be very, very, very overwhelming. So I think our government uses this to simplify the process, take an overall average and a brief snapshot, and then they can make decisions on that, because, you know, the CPI will move in accordance to prices, but I think a lot of times in a two-year span, we may not expect the price sensitivity to be, or the price movement, you know, to be very dramatic, okay? So I think 2 years is okay just for a on average basis. But to point out that CPI is not perfect, I wanted to show you the biases and why it's not perfect, okay? So now we're going to discuss chained CPI versus regular CPI, okay? Chained CPI is a way to index spending and taxes, including Social Security benefits, right? So the chained CPI is going to incorporate more information than the regular CPI does, because the chained CPI will bring in the factors of the Social Security benefits, overall taxes, and government spending, right, on subsidies, where the regular CPI does not consider those factors, right? So because of the government spending, right, and it's not really economic activity created revenue, right, our chained CPI will be lower on about a 25 basis point basis, right? So about 0.25, right, percentage points lower than our regular CPI, where regular CPI brings in, and so remember, consumer price index. We're bringing in prices from the overall market for all products in the market, and we're seeing how they are priced, right? So this will give us kind of our inflation factor. So you can see in the upper left-hand corner, you know, prices were relatively high, right? They were up. So we saw some pretty decent price increases through inflation here, right? So how does the federal government, how do they control inflation, right? They control inflation through the adjustments of interest rates. So just like prices on bonds, you know, a bond has an interest rate, right? If interest rates go up, prices will go down. That's just how the cause and effect works, right? So if prices on a bond, if interest rates on a bond go up, or, you know, the prices will move down. The same thing. So every bank, right, they peg their interest rates to typically the 10-year Treasury note, right? So the 10-year Treasury note is signified as a risk-free asset or a risk-free security. So they use that as a benchmark, and then they'll adjust their rates higher for risk premium, etc., right? So as the Treasury or as the Federal Reserve, right, adjust interest rates higher, it will naturally push down prices, because as interest rates go up, the demand for debt goes down because people have to pay more money on higher interest rates. So that is going to curb the demand in the market. So if people can't borrow as much money or aren't as willing to borrow as much money because borrowing costs have increased, right, that is going to put downward pressure on prices, because remember, demand is slowing, right? Demand is slowing. So the Federal Reserve can really curb inflation through interest rates, right? So here at this 3.5% real CPI or regular CPI index number, right, we can see that, you know, interest rates were probably pretty low here, right? Interest rates were probably pretty low. So prices were rather high because the demand for products were elevated because, you know, debt was cheaper. You know, your credit card. So all of your debt is tied to 10-year T-bills, essentially, right? So your credit card adjustable rate will be tied to the fluctuation of treasury bills, right? So the Federal Reserve can really control and curb market enthusiasm or market sentiment through interest rates, right? So I would say there was probably a low interest rate environment here, right? And then maybe the Fed or, you know, saw, or whatever regulatory agency may have saw, hey, look, you know, prices are getting a little high, the market's getting a little hot, we need to deter consumers from demanding so much in the economy, so let's raise rates, right? Let's raise rates up so that we can make the cost of debt more expensive, so consumers will be less willing to spend through debt mechanisms, and then they'll burn through cash faster, right? So most investors or most consumers are not willing to part with their cash as easily as they could or would with borrowed money. So with higher interest rates, a decline in spending happens. So if a decline in spending happens, that means the demand has weakened. So therefore, there's going to be too much supply in the market, right, which will automatically push prices down. So this is how the Federal Reserve and the appropriate regulatory agencies control prices, control inflation, right, through interest rates, okay? So you can see that, you know, so prices got pretty low around the middle of this chart, and then that was good. That was good. That's probably healthy for the economy to see a little pullback, because you don't want to see markets get red hot and too high and prices get inflated too high, and then you'll see a market crash, right? We don't want, because, you know, it's the relativity, right? If it goes up, it's going to come down, and it's going to come down in a reciprocal manner, right? So if this market goes straight up, it's probably going to come straight down at some point. So we want to see the market go up incrementally, right? We don't want to see a big run up, right? We want to see a nice, healthy, steady run up, right? So at this point, you know, interest rates were probably low, consumer spending was high, prices were getting inflated too fast, so the Federal Reserve steps in and says, hey, we're going to curb this enthusiasm, we're going to curb this market sentiment, and we're going to push prices down because we don't want the economy to get too hot, right? So they'll use the interest rate mechanism, the adjustment in rates, to really control the economy and prices, right? So this is what we want to illustrate here. So now let's look at real wages versus nominal wages, right? So the nominal wage is the wage measured in money, dollars in the United States, right? So the real wage is the nominal wage in the economy adjusted for changes in purchasing power, right? So this is purchasing power, right? What is our purchasing power like, right? So down here, right, we probably have more purchasing power because prices are cheaper, right? Versus here, where prices were high, we probably have a little less purchasing power, right? So it is defined as the nominal wage divided by CPI, right? So let's look at it today. So here's the equation to figure out. So we want to find out the dollars today, right? How much is $1 million in 1960, considering these two price index numbers, right? Okay, these are just given. Okay, these index numbers are given. You can find them at the ustreasury.gov, right? That's where I picked them up from. So $1 million in 1960. So we see the consumer price index figures here, right? So we say the consumer price index today divided by the CPI in the past, right? So we have the 1960 value of CPI, right? And we want to find the dollars today. We just put 1995 for just simplicity, whatever, just random number, year chosen, right? So 1995. So we want to find out what is $1 million in 1960 worth today, right? Let's just say it's 1995. So the CPI number in 1995 was 160.5 divided by the CPI number in 1960. So now we have $1 million. We want to know how much $1 million was worth today if we had $1 million back in 1960. So if you do the calculation, you'll see that $1 million in 1960 is worth $4.8 million today.